Hey there, this is Rose 420, and we're about to be delving into the very tragic case and disappearance of Sage Smith from Charlottesville, North Carolina. I will be indulging an amazing strain called Chem Pie that I love. I don't know what that means, but I love it. And also a nice glass of Pinot Grigio. So get your bowl, get your glasses, and let's get ready to get into this case. Okay, so hello listeners, I am Rose 420, as I said in the intro, and I'm going to be smoking a delectable strain called Chem Pie. It's a nice indica, puts me in a nice calm state, but not too sleepy, and enjoying some Pinot Grigio, and I encourage you to enjoy whatever strain or whatever drink makes you happy. Okay, so let's dive in to Sage Smith's case. By the way, this is my first podcast, so please bear with me because I don't even think by the 20th episode it will sound even close to professional. I'm just being realistic with you guys here. So if you continue with me, God bless. Okay, so Sage Smith. She disappeared at 19 on November 20th, 2012 in Charlottesville, North Carolina. She was last seen at 6:30 at an Amtrak station and thought to be meeting 29-year-old Eric McFadden, who sounds like a bully on a 90s sitcom, and I hate him. And we're going to get into more of that later, and I gave him a special nickname as I was going through this information, but I just assumed he was guilty after I read his name because he sounds like an evil character. Okay, so to continue on, he said they never met and he left town and never talked to detectives, which is super sketch. So that's the basics. So let's get into what happened in Sage's early life because that is also very important for you to understand this case. She was born a male, and as a side note, I will be using all she, her pronouns. I don't care what she was born. It's all about what she prefers to be called. So all she, her pronouns from here on out. I respect people. If you identified as a unicorn, I'm not sure what the pronouns are for that, but I would allow you to do that and respect your choice. Okay, so anyways, she was born a male named Deshaud LeQuinn Smith on December 13th, 1992. And I consider if you're born in the 90s, you're a baby. Even though I'm December 89 and just missed the 90s cutoff, I feel old these days with 89, so you're a baby. Her parents divorced and her father ended up in jail on drug charges. They both ended up remarrying, so Sage ended up with a lot of step-siblings. This made for, like, a really chaotic environment for her to be raised in. So she left and went with her grandma, who went by Cookie. Can we all just take a moment to appreciate how awesome grandmas are? Like, they are just amazing. Cookie does not fall short in that category at all. And she's also prominent in the community because she's a part of the tenant association and the residential patrol. So she likes to be involved. Her and Sage are extremely close, and she's an awesome grandma. At 12, though, her and Cookie moved to Fifeville, a neighborhood in Charlottesville, where she met her best friend, Shakira Washington. And on a side note, with the name Shakira, I have to acknowledge how hot Shakira looked at the Super Bowl. I mean, right? Like, amazing. Anyways, I'm going to take a hit and continue. Sage was returned to her mother eventually. This was still a chaotic living situation, so eventually she was placed into the foster system. In her teens is when Sage came out as transgender, telling everybody that she cared about, she identified as a woman, but she didn't really care about labels, but she liked she, her pronouns, but she considered herself more gender fluid than actually a woman. So all of the people she cared about started referring to her in those pronouns besides her father. They stopped speaking for a little bit. But after there was some pushback from the family, they started speaking again, and he realized he just wanted his child to be happy with who she is, which, on a side note, even though he stopped talking to her, which sucks, I think it's amazing he came around and realized it's all about how happy she is, not him. And a lot of parents don't do that. So, I mean, shitty beginning, but he made up for it, I think. So everybody said she was extremely fashionable, and that everybody loved to be around her. She loved to dance and frequented the one queer bar where she lived in Charlottesville, North Carolina. It's a really small town, so I'm surprised they even had one. But she was always there, or she went to the strip club and danced there. Not on stage or anything, but she would go there, dance, have a fun time. She was the first person in her high school, in her family, to graduate high school. Sorry about that. She was the first person in her family to graduate high school. She later moved out into her own place, and her roommates became Shakira, her old best friend, and Aubrey Carson, which reminds me, I miss living with my girlfriend so much. We had so much fun in college, and I don't remember it. Okay, so anyways, Sage worked as an assistant at a hair salon and dreamed of becoming a cosmetologist. Those were her dreams. She wanted to do hair. She wanted to be able to cut anybody's hair. So she had dreams. Sage had one run-in with the local cops at Shakira's 19th birthday after a fight broke out over a boy. But nothing really became of it besides that Shakira and Sage got into a huge fight because Sage felt she should have intervened more. Her father was also released from jail during this time, so he's back out and in her life, and she had plans to visit her stepsister, which will be important coming up because those plans are important to her and they were in the future, so clearly she was planning on being around. At 5:40 p.m. that night, she woke her roommate, Aubrey, to tell her she was headed out for a date and she would be back later in the evening. However, Sage never returned home. Aubrey woke up, got off the couch, and saw Sage wasn't there at night and kept trying to call her phone, and it kept going to voicemail. Even though I know this is the whole point of the podcast, she seems like such a wonderful girl that I got to this part and was already heart-wrenched. I was like, oh no, please don't let it happen to her. I love her. And on a side note, I want to bring this up before we get into everything, that transgender people are far more likely to be victims of violence. So, I mean, that's fucked up. It's 2021. Just let people be happy. So Aubrey awoke the next morning and found that Sage had still not returned. She contacted her family and friends because she was so worried. Rightfully so, right? I mean, she knows her roommate. Everybody knows their roommate. Her stepsister, Kira, I hope that I'm saying that right. I may not be. Said she saw Sage on Main Street at 6:30 the night before speaking on the phone. She said to whoever she was talking to, I'll be there in 5 minutes. But she didn't actually speak to Sage, so we don't know who she was speaking to or where there is. Aubrey finally decided to make a call to Cookie, whose grandma's rocking intuition, per usual. Like I said, grandmas are awesome. Immediately knew something wasn't right. The investigation for Sage began by the Charlottesville PD on November 22nd, 2012. They were concerned about foul play because of what I said earlier. Unfortunately, transgender people face many dangers cisgender people don't face on a daily basis. It's unfortunate that's how the world is, but that's how it is right now, and it's fucked up. Okay. So they said that they started to collect a timeline. However, Aubrey said all they asked for was Sage's name, birthdate, and a picture. I personally wasn't there, but this wouldn't shock me. A transgender person of color getting kind of brushed under the rug. And I say this as a cisgender person with acknowledged white privilege, that if she was not transgender, she probably would have received more attention. Because as everybody knows, the first 24 hours are the most important when people go missing. So I'm not sure what happened, but I believe Aubrey. That's my conclusion. Make your own, please. Sage's cell phone records end up getting subpoenaed because she was always known to have her cell phone on her. So remember, earlier it was going to voicemail, but she's well known for having a cell phone on her. So the police were taking too long, right? So the family gets together, and I don't know if y'all watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians ever. That's the perfect show to get stoned and watch because they are literally disasters and prove money doesn't buy class. But anyways, I've watched it all the seasons though, so I can't really judge. Anyways, Kim is like the hacking genius of her family. All of the members know she can hack into voicemails. She's hacked for all their ex-boyfriends. That's how they found out they were cheating and all this stuff. So the family members are like Kim Kardashian on this shit. They hack into her phone and they see that the last number she contacted was an out-of-state number. Now, I wouldn't have done this, and this is so smart of them. They posted the number on Facebook to see if anybody could identify who it was. I never would have thought of that. Go them. What an amazing family. A person named Yami, I hope I'm saying that right too, Ortiz, finally named Eric McFadden as the owner of the number. Yuck, still hate him, gives me the heebie-jeebies. Sage and Eric have met online. It hasn't really been proven how they met, but Sage used to post in casual encounters on Craigslist, so that's a very likely source, even though it wasn't proven. They had been texting and having phone relations for weeks, and Eric had a girlfriend, because of course he did. Her name is Esther, and she'll come up later, but of course he did, because he's a scumbag, just like I said in the beginning. And to put the cherry on the creeper scumbag cupcake that he was paying Sage to keep their relationship a secret from his girlfriend, because he knew she would not be happy with it, obviously. So yuck, he's gross. Sage's father was provided a photo of nasty-ass Eric McFadden, and he posted it on Facebook. They kept all this info from the PD, though, because they were worried that the PD would shut down the homegrown investigation that was getting more leads than the police department was. Although Sage's family sounds like the people on Don't Fuck With Cats, that documentary to me, where like, you fuck with Sage, they're finding you. Like, they don't care, law enforcement or not, they are finding you. And they found Eric McFadden. On the 23rd, though, Ortiz narked out Sage's family and the PD and told McFadden, I will probably refer to him as McFuckboy from here on out because it just gets worse, but whatever, that they were investigating into him. The PD began conducting grid searches of Main Street and the areas around it, checking open spaces, fields, checking, you know, trash receptacles, so trash cans, dumpsters, all that stuff, and asking any owners of surrounding businesses for surveillance footage. The cameras captured nothing. Of course they didn't. Even when they do, it looks like the film is from 1980 all the time. I don't know what that's about, but whatever. Have you ever seen like Walmart in your local town post looking for somebody and they're so rich and they have cameras where their face is like pixelated? I never understood it, but that is not the point of this. So it sounds like at this point, the family is crushing the PD's investigation. That's my opinion, but I digress. So the police finally learned about Eric McFuckboy after his girlfriend called them to perform a welfare check. She was out of town and couldn't reach him. But when the police got to the apartment, nobody was there. Shocking, right? His girlfriend gave the PD permission to search the house, and they seized his computer. They also found a CVS receipt for November 22nd, which is the last thing they found with a date in the apartment. So this led the PD to believe that he probably left town after Sage's father put his stupid face all over Facebook. He deserved it. Can you tell I don't like this dude? I, like, really don't like him. And I didn't like him from the first second. Bad vibes will always give you away, folks. You got bad vibes, people know. His cell phone also pinged off a tower near her apartment, but since the town is so small, the cell phone towers are so close together, it was inconclusive. So finally, there's a timeline for the evening of November 20th, according to McFuckboy's records. So at 5:17 p.m., Sage sent a text asking McFuckboy when he was leaving. At 5:20 p.m., McFuckboy responded saying he had already left and was at the Hampton Inn. 5:17 p.m. to 5:40 p.m., the pair texted on and off. 5:40 p.m., Sage left her apartment and made her way down to downtown Charlottesville. At 6:08 p.m., McFuckboy texted Sage asking where she was. At 6:12 p.m., McFuckboy again inquired about Sage's whereabouts. 6:18 to 6:37 p.m., McFadden texted Sage numerous times. Sorry, I was going to say McFuckboy and I said his actual name. But as she was on a call with a friend, it's unsure if she saw these messages. 6:27, upset, McFuckboy texted Sage again, claiming she stood him up. 6:35 p.m., her cousin saw Sage, or I mean her step-sibling saw Sage walking down 4th Street near the 400 West block of Main Street. At 6:40 p.m., Sage walked westbound on Main Street, and that is the last time somebody definitely saw Sage. McFuckboy finally contacts his poor girlfriend on the 25th, and he's like, I'm in D.C., and I need money. Like, please, boy. You ran away without a single word. You were cheating. And it looks like you killed the girl you were cheating with, because why are you running away? And now you want money? I would have told him to fuck off kindly before hanging up. The girlfriend replied that he needed to contact the police, which he did 2 days later from NYC. And since he needed money and is traveling, I'm assuming that the girlfriend sent him money, which she never should have done, but not my life, not my problem. So later he contacts the police from New York City. The police obviously ask McFuckboy to come back, and to absolutely nobody's shock, he hung up immediately. Later, Esther, who I literally have no idea or any words for why she is even entertaining this dude's calls after he asked for money, after running away without saying anything and possibly killing somebody, but whatever. Called the PD and said he had come to an agreement where he would come down there and he had a scheduled bus ticket to go there. However, once again, to nobody's shock at all, he didn't show, right? Are we shocked that he didn't show? Were you expecting him to show? I'm sorry, he did not. This dude seriously emailed the girlfriend to say he changed his mind. Emailed to say he changed his mind about being cooperative in a disappearance case. Like, what? What is this? If my eyes were rolling any harder, they would be in the back of my head and I could see my brain. If I see you, McFuckboy, just know you're getting a swift kick to the shin and balls. I don't even care. Right to the balls. I don't kick guys in the balls, but I kick him in the balls. On the 28th, the PD held a press conference saying it wasn't a criminal investigation into Sage's disappearance. Like, what? No criminal investigation, and they have all this evidence of this guy being in contact with her and then her suddenly going missing. I hate to bring this up again because I don't want to make this podcast about this, but it needs to be a platform for communities that are being ignored. And the transgender is one. And I know if it was me, it would definitely be labeled a criminal investigation because I'm a white cis female. So, like, it's definitely a criminal investigation. Hang on. Gotta take a hit and a sip to calm down. Fuck inequality. But anyways, 3 days after this sham of a press conference, McFuckboy's girlfriend comes forward again. So she's still talking to this loser. Some women, man, have no shame. Anyways, she has another email from this douchebag explaining what happened on the night in question to Sage. And once again, to nobody's shock, and I mean no one's, the events were different than he originally claimed. Well, no shit, Sherlock. I could have told you that before Esther came forward with her stupid email. And now he reveals, to nobody's surprise, he saw Sage that night. Well, duh. We all knew you did, even when you said you didn't. We all knew you saw her. So, once again, huge eye roll. He went on to confirm his McFuckboy status by saying a group of people approached Sage and that she had a ton of enemies, so he left before anything could happen. So, I guess that this group of her enemies could attack her freely? Like, why would he just leave and not say anything or do anything or grab somebody who could help her? That seems weird, right? It couldn't have happened that way. That's too weird. A group just approaches out of nowhere, all made up of Sage's enemies. Like, come on, McFuckboy, give me a break. At least give me a good story if you're going to give me a story. Anyways, like I said, confirms his fuckboy status. He also claimed he was being blackmailed by Sage and that she kept threatening to tell his girlfriend unless he got money. I don't support blackmail, but if anybody deserved it, it was McFuckboy. I hope Sage blackmailed the shit out of him and got a ton of money because he's a douche and I just cannot. So, yeah. So, anyways, I'm going to end this half of the story. The rest will air tomorrow, but I'm going to end this half of the story by saying that after the girlfriend came forward with the email, the PD said that McFuckboy shot up the suspect list of this non-criminal investigation, which makes no sense. Why would there be suspects if it was not a criminal investigation? And of course this guy should have been on the top of the suspect list. He was the last one with her. Isn't that a basic rule? Like every show I watch, last person with them better have a good alibi or else it's looking like bye-bye to prison. You know what I mean? So I don't know. So basically the first half of this, I'm thinking the PD botched it due to racism and being against her being transgender and not taking it as seriously as they should have. And luckily the family did and found this guy. I think if the PD had found him before the family posted his shit all over Facebook, the story would be very different and he wouldn't be on the run. But that's not what happened because her case wasn't taken seriously. So halfway through the story, she's missing. McFadden is somewhere. He says New York City. We don't really know. Esther's girlfriend keeps coming in with emails from him, changing his story, explaining stuff, and nothing's coming together. So on the next episode, we will be looking into the further botched investigation and what has been happening since 2012, because it's still an open investigation, and more on McFuckboy and Esther and that whole mess and the conclusion of the case, although it may not be a happy one, a conclusion. Please join us for part two. I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you have lots of thoughts and opinions. Please share with me and please share this podcast. Thanks.